So we're just going to start with a few minutes of meditation, just so you can feel relaxed and fully here. Everybody was perfectly on time. Everybody made it without any car crashes in the snow. So meditation is really very simple. There's no big secret. The word for meditation means simply to familiarize yourself, and you're familiarizing yourself with your mind. And so just for a few minutes, you're going to focus on your breath, and you're just going to breathe in and out. And you'll notice that your mind wants to go to the future, or to the past, or to the baby. But you're just going to keep focusing on your breath, and just noticing every time you drift, you come back to your breath. And we'll do that for 5 minutes. And I have to say, my root teacher is a mother and grandmother. So she always thought it was the best thing to have the kids in the room, and that, you know, we just see them and hear them as, you know, the crickets or the birds or any other thing that makes us happy, that we're happy to have in our environment. So can you hear me in the back room, in the back of the room? It's just wave at me if my voice softens.
Everybody needs a blanket.
So just to say, this isn't a religion class. Buddhism is considered the science of the mind. And so there's nothing to worry about. There's nothing that conflicts with any of your personal belief systems. And what we're going to talk about today is really some very practical and useful information that I think anybody can use in any situation. So just how human beings are, how our normal human being minds are most of the time. So if it's useful, great. And I have to say that these particular teachings are some of the most useful teachings that I've ever received, and I use them all the time. So I'm really happy to share them with you because they've really helped me a great deal. So we want to start out just by thinking how much we wish that everyone in the world has some happiness. So we have a prayer called the Four Immeasurables, and we think of, may all beings be happy. May they all be free of suffering. May we and all beings be free of suffering. May we and all beings have a happiness that's not touched by sorrow. And may we and all beings rest in equanimity. So when we say that last part, rest in equanimity, what we're saying is, may all beings not be trapped by emotions that hurt them and other people. So we're going to talk a little bit today about those strong emotions that we know cause ourselves suffering, and if we're in the midst of them, I can predict that we're causing a few other people some suffering too. So we're going to look at strong emotions and how interesting they are. Now, traditionally in Tibetan Buddhism, when we give a Dharma talk, we take that talk from reliable sources. So it's not just me making something up that I think is good information. It's something that's passed down by people that we feel are very reliable sources that have put this into practice and can testify that, yes, this is good and useful information. So we start by thinking with gratitude towards our teachers, and you probably have people who've helped you a lot too. So you can think for a minute of just who have been the teachers in your life who've really helped you and cultivate that heart of gratitude. And when I think of the teachers in my life, I have some very primary teachers, Venerable Dahani Wahu, His Holiness Chetsang Rinpoche, and my monastic training came from Pema Chodron. So many of these teachings today are some of the instructions that Pema Chodron gives the nuns and monks of Gampo Abbey when she's working with them directly. And she's been heavily influenced by Joko Beck and Zigger Khantrol Rinpoche. So if you want more information, those are three names of people who've written about these subjects that you can find. And they're, for those of you from the Zen Center, Joko Beck is a very famous Zen teacher. So it crosses all the different boundaries. So in Buddhism, we have the story of the historical Buddha. You know the story of the historical Buddha? He's under the Bodhi tree. He's gone through all kinds of different spiritual journeys, but he's under the Bodhi tree. And that last night, they say he's attacked by the demons of Mara. And so this is a typical story of a spiritual leader. It's like Christ in the desert being tempted by the devil. You know, at the last minute, all the last things come in. So here he is under the Bodhi tree, and they say that all the arrows from all of the armies turned into flowers. And so that seems like a really nice story. We would really like all the arrows to turn into flowers. But when we ask, who or what is Mara, and what are these enemies, then we look at, well, really, they're not necessarily external things. Although it's personified in the story, when we think of what is that enemy, it has to do with in Buddhism, a false sense of self, believing there's a self to protect, a sense of fear of death, and strong emotions. So strong emotions are considered the army of demons, one of the armies of demons that are causing us suffering, and that's what turned into flowers, all the different kinds of strong emotions. And the fourth Mara is being attached to the bliss of meditation. So interesting. You think that there's, you know, a perfect peace, and then you want it so badly, you want to hold on to it. And so that's the fourth Mara. So what I like about this story, what I find so interesting, so it's great, right? He's enlightened. He's this perfect being now. Mara comes back. You know, it's not the end of the story. So turns out much later in his life, he's in his little retreat cabin, and he has his attendant there, Ananda, and Mara knocks on the door, and the attendant says, "Oh, go away, Buddha doesn't want you here." And he runs to Buddha and says, "You won't believe who came to the door, your enemy, Mara." And Buddha said, "Oh, no, invite him in." And he said, "Oh, Mara, please come in. Please come, let's sit and have a cup of tea." And this is the quality that we're gonna talk about today. We like to think of so many different kinds of things as our enemy, as really bad, as really hurtful. And it's a really interesting shift to think, oh, this is an old friend that I'm going to ask to come in and have a cup of tea so that we can chat. So that's basically what we're going to talk about today, how to make those things that we're frightened of, we're scared of, we dislike so much in ourselves that it causes us to really dislike other people who have that same quality. This is our old friend that we're gonna invite in to have a cup of tea. How in the world do you get there? That's the interesting thing. Hi, come in. Yeah. I was trying to think of what my fantasy teacher looks like. So, you know, I've met a lot of these wonderful Tibetan lamas. So one fantasy teacher would be the Dalai Lama, who's now 73 or 74, so he's at that old man stage, and really kindly. And then I think, well, yes, and I think of, you know, some of the older women who I think are really beatific. That'd be an ideal teacher. And then I think, well, it's not just older people that I think would be an imaginary perfect teacher. Then there are the young, angelic-looking people that might be a perfect teacher. And the truth is, the perfect teacher are these Maras, these strong emotions. We don't want to think of them as our teacher because we want this lovely being who loves us to be our teacher. But we would like it to be easier. But when we review our lives, it's been the tremendously difficult, painful situations that we've had to extricate ourselves from that really have given us some of the best teachings of our lives. When we've had to sit down, and I would say teach ourselves the Dharma, or you might say teach ourselves the Bible, or teach ourselves, you know, whatever tradition that you're from. It's those situations, those maras, that become our teacher. And they don't seem to leave. We can carry them with us. So when you think of the painful situation and how easy it is to feel totally trapped in it, because you think about it all the time, it's always on your mind, it's in your memory. So here's that painful memory coming over and over and over again until you extricate yourself. Or, not like Buddha, it's not Mara coming back that you ask in to have a cup of tea in an ordinary life. In my life, it's, oh my goodness, I've lost my temper again. There it is again, that same pattern repeating itself. Every single time I'm triggered by that same kind of event, that same kind of pattern. So that's why I talked about the strong emotions being our most faithful teacher, because they're by our side. Dalai Lama's coming to Chicago, he may come just once. But I don't know what your favorite painful emotion is, but we could say anger probably comes once a week maybe, or once a month, right by your side. So we're gonna really explore how we can shift into a kind of curiosity about these strong emotions. We don't have to get to the point of welcoming and, you know, pouring the tea, but just can we shift to curiosity, to making it not the enemy, to making it not the cause of turning some kind of self-hatred in upon ourselves. So when we look at emotions and we analyze what are they, one of the most brilliant things Trungpa Rinpoche said was that emotions are storyline and an energy mixed together. So just contemplate that. Storyline and an energy mixed together. So when we think about emotions, the Tibetans are really wonderful about classifying things. We would say that there are 51 mental states, 51 emotional states. And most of them we call destructive emotions or afflictive emotions, the ones that really hurt or cause pain. And then we group them into different kinds of groups. So if you wanted to say, well, what were the basic five of those 51? We could say just about every human being, well, not just about, every human being has anger, pride, jealousy, ignorance, and desire. It comes with being human. So first of all, just accepting that this is being human, we're not immune to any of these. We can work with them, we can transform them, but every single human being has them. And then if you wanted to think of them, all right, what would be even more basic than that, if you were looking for a beginning place, you could say, well, we could say that there are three kinds of emotions. There's basically anger, and all the different kinds of anger, and desire, all the different kinds of desire. So what you're attracted to and what you want to push away. And then ignorance that pervades all of it. Reasonable, yeah? So you can imagine it like a tree, with the anger, ignorance, and desire being the root, and then all of these different qualities. So if we were trying to imagine all the different kinds of anger, all the different, there's like, remember white hot anger? Psychotic rage? Irritation? Annoyance? What are some other kinds of anger?
Road rage.
Road rage, oh, that's a really good one, yeah.
Seething.
Seething, oh yes. And we're talking about shrewishness? Mm. Yeah. So you can see how the root of this one basic emotion can lead into millions of others. And the difference in, you can immediately see just from the descriptions of the words, have to do with the storyline. The storyline of road rage versus the storyline of shrewishness versus the storyline of seething. Do you see how they would each have a different storyline? But if you imagine the feeling of them, it might actually feel very similar. road rage and seething, like the physical quality, the anger, what you would be experiencing in your body and in your mind might be very similar, even though the storyline today might be different, right? So then it starts to lead to the conclusion that it's the anger, not the storyline, that's the problem. And at a certain point, we can start to say, I would just like to be free of anger. I might feel perfectly justified. I might be seething, just totally seething. You know, and I might feel totally right about it. You know, this happened to me. It's not my fault. It's their fault. But the feeling of the anger is the same. And the feeling of being trapped by it is the same. You know, you're thinking about it day after day after day. It doesn't matter whether it's the storyline that went with the seething or the storyline that went with the road rage. It's that same quality of being trapped and that same, essentially being trapped in your mind. You can't escape that particular story, right? Doesn't it feel familiar just to sort of call it up, your own favorite horror issue? So then we start to say, okay, how can we just, as a normal person, touch base with the root? You know, where do all these different things begin? Because some days I can drive to work and it's perfectly all right. Somebody cuts me off, I don't really care. Some days I'm late, somebody stops too long at a red light, it's a problem. You know, so what's the difference? Where does it start to arise? This is actually one of the good things about being in a monastery. You make your life so quiet and so unexciting that you start to see where these little things begin. You know, what is the very beginning? And what the meditation teachers are starting to identify is there's a quality called shempa. So we would say part of being human, part of being alive, is a kind of, in our state, not a Buddhist state, in our normal state, there's a kind of anxiety, a kind of subtle discomfort. We don't really have a word for it in our language, but in Tibetan they call it shenpa. There's a dissatisfaction, just this subtle shenpa. And that this is just true of being an unenlightened person who's alive. You know, this is just pervading everybody. And so with this just subtle, maybe we could say it, a subtle insecurity, then if you have an incident that triggers something, like somebody you pass might have a facial tic, and you go, well, that's not very nice. That person made a face at me. I don't think I like that person. You start to build a story. And you don't even realize that you're building the story because you think you're right. You think all of your perceptions are true, right? You think I'm a wise person. I know what's true. I know what's real for me. But essentially you're making a projection because, you know, maybe the person even didn't have a facial tic at all. Maybe you just blinked. You know, or maybe they're thinking about the road rage they had getting there. But we make some sort of interpretation, some sort of projection. Even if, you know, just about everything, even if someone yells at us, we think they're yelling at me, they're bad. We have a projection about what we think they're thinking and feeling that causes them to yell. So there's some sort of storyline that builds up. And it builds up so quickly, we don't even realize it. We just say, gee, that person is really an annoying person. They're always like that. They're always in a bad mood. They really ruin the community. I think it's so funny. I was, you know, every once in a while, I'm in a house that has a TV. And so I watched one of the Survivor shows, and it's just hysterical. It's just the funniest thing I've ever seen. It's just like this. Somebody makes up a story, and then they have to vote the person out. And it's just a riot to see the story become a group phenomenon. And it works the same way in communities. So you know, either at work or I'm sure you're in some sort of organization or work situation where you see that, oh, so-and-so is doing a bad job, we better fire them, and we better make sure they get off the committee because, you know, they just don't know what they're doing and they're ruining everything. So we have this sense of once we start letting our storyline build, that then we have to fix the situation, and it's usually by acting out on our anger in some way or another. You know, that person clearly should be fired. So you can see how immediately your story starts creating a bigger and bigger story, and the more you think about the story, the more irritated you get. Then you call your friends, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it can work with just about anything. So I wanted to give you a test case. I wanted to see if I could make you angry really quickly. So this is my attempt. See, I want you to imagine, like, for you guys, your best friend, you know, some young person who is, you know, just really wonderful. Some, you know, in their 20s, somebody in their 20s who you think is just the dearest person in the whole world, right? Just a lovely, lovely person. And then all of a sudden, on the way over here, we turn on the radio and Bush has instituted the draft and they're going to be drafted tomorrow. Can you feel like I can almost make the energy rise in my head and, you know, feel it go right up the back of my head? That whole sense of just like that, we can get really, really angry. It goes right into, oh, that Bush, look what he's doing, blah, 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 right? It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with skillful means and really good ways to work towards peace. It just means we can generate anger by building a story. And the story even can be imaginary. So I want you to try it yourself for a minute. Just take whatever's your favorite pet peeve. And just spend another 5 minutes just thinking about how that pet peeve goes through a pattern of getting bigger and bigger and bigger in your mind. And see if you can trace it back and forth, up and down. What makes it, what triggers it, and what story you tell yourself. So can you see a relationship between the story and the energy? And the story that makes you get madder and madder, or jealousy, or pride? So there's a real cause and effect. It's they say it's like building a fire, and we just keep putting on log after log after log, and the fire gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Generally, when we look at things, you know, how is it that we get mixed up with all of these things? It has to do with a discrepancy between our expectations and reality. And so we would like to have a really peaceful world. We would like to have personal peace. And we associate that with things not changing, things being the way we would like them to be, and with things not changing. And we're doing that in the context of a world that changes all the time. So when we think of the kind of impermanence that we live with, we can think of the impermanence of the environment. So like, you know, we're having lovely plans today. Maybe we're going to go out to dinner after this, and now we have a snowstorm. So something's getting in the way of the perfect plan that you had. the normal change of the normal situation in the world. This is winter. And, you know, for us in Vermont, well, this is true. We started having a really warm winter in Vermont. And then we got a normal 3-foot snowstorm. And it was very annoying. But, you know, the reality is it's Vermont and it snows. So we have this world that's changing all the time. And then if we look at ourselves and our friends, the people we love are changing all the time. So you fall in love with somebody, it's really, really great. Then something goes wrong, and 3 years later, all of a sudden you're fighting and there's a divorce. So we wanted an unchanging from that moment of, you know, just fabulous, joyous, pure-hearted love. We wanted that to last forever without any kind of change. And year by year, day by day, moment by moment, both individuals change. Doesn't mean you won't moment by moment feel that loving quality, but moment by moment, you are changing, they are changing. Moment by moment, we and they are aging. Moment by moment, we could have all of a sudden a cold, all of a sudden cancer. It just changes. So we would like this perfect peace, and we're trying to create it like moths going to a flame. We think something's going to make us happy, and we're going off to the wrong thing. So just to say, when we look at the source of our unrealistic expectations, we can start to say, accept change and accept the impermanence in the world, and really start to enjoy the impermanence of the world and treasure the impermanence of the world. But just to say, one quality of the trigger is this kind of impermanence. So in Lojong, we look and say, what we want to do is we want to recognize the emotion when it arises. So recognize neurosis as neurosis. Lojong means mind training. So we want to get out of the trap of being enslaved by these emotions, enslaved by this pattern that's really familiar to us. So we want to recognize it when it's happening, right? And this actually, these are called the three difficulties in mental training. It's very difficult. It's wonderful here when we're in this calm situation to imagine ourselves getting angry. But when we're in the moment of anger, it's very difficult to recognize we're in the height of our anger. Then we want to be able to stop it while it's happening. Then we want to cut it by the root so it doesn't happen again. So those are the three difficulties and the three things that we want to experiment with. So remembering your own pattern and the whole range of things, you want to recognize it when it happens. So just think how easy that is relatively. We're not saying stop it entirely. We're just saying, when we're mad, when we're in the middle of it, we just want to know we're doing it. Not afterwards when we have to go apologize to everybody. We just want to know sooner when our favorite pattern is going on. We're going to look at that pattern of how it arises from the subtle Shenpa to the fanning the flames to in the flames. And we're just going to say the first step is just recognizing the flames for what they are. So that's Mara knocking on the door. You go, oh, you're here again. How interesting. Not, oh, I'm a terrible person. I'm mad again. Mm. Right? See how different that is? Oh, interesting. Yet again, I'm being triggered. This is my continual pattern. Then you want to get to the next stage, which is recognizing it a little sooner before it gets to the biggest part. You can say, I'm really irritated now. I don't want to go into the full-blown reaction. And the advice in terms of changing the pattern is to really do anything at all. And Pema actually starts laughing and says, you can stand on your head. It doesn't matter what you do. It just matters that you change the pattern, just even the tiniest bit. You don't have to go into beatific saintliness. Oh, I'm no longer mad. It's gone. It's just, okay, I think I'll go take a walk for a minute. So changing the pattern. And then the most interesting instruction is, how do you cut it at the root so it doesn't happen again? And the instructions are really, really simple. And they're just, you know, they're going to sound really simple, but it has to do with putting it into practice. So it has to do with dropping the storyline. Just sitting down for 1 minute and experimenting with what happens if you drop the storyline. And that's harder to do than you think, because generally we feel totally right. We have absolute conviction that we're right and they're wrong in whatever situation it is. And so just dropping the storyline, and the instructions are just if you can stop the storyline and drop it for 1 minute. Not all day or not even all morning, just 1 minute, drop the storyline. And the work that people are doing with this is just tremendous. They're saying that it's so courageous to drop the storyline for 1 minute, because for most people, the original trigger goes back probably to when they were a baby, that there's some core issue that's at the root of things. And to just drop the storyline for 1 minute is an astounding act of courage. And I remember when I first heard these stories, you know, of these instructions, so I thought, I'm going to go home from this retreat and I'm going to put it into practice. And at that time, I was living with somebody who I think was probably verbally abusive. So they started their pattern, and I started my pattern of defending myself. And I thought, well, I'm going to try this out. I'm just going to test it. And I could sit down on my cushion. I could barely get to my cushion. I, like, sat down and I jumped up again, because it was so scary to let go of the, I'm right, I have to protect myself. I'm going to at least mentally fight back. But then it became really interesting over time, because then after a while you could sit down for actually a full minute and drop the storyline, and then longer and longer and longer. What happens when you drop the storyline is you feel tremendous energy. So remember when we talked about Bush going, you know, making the draft? I could almost feel an energy rise up the back of my skull. So when we have these emotions, we have these very forceful energy buildups going through our body. And when you drop the storyline and you're in the heat of something you feel really strongly about, it can actually be physically painful. It can hurt in your solar plexus or hurt in the pit of your stomach. You know, my personal experience is it really hurts, and it's frightening that there's so much energy, and it's frightening that it hurts. But the interesting thing is, because everything is impermanent, it can't stay. It can't stay painful. The energy without the storyline can't stay strong. It dissolves by itself. It actually goes away. You don't actually have to do anything. You just have to sit without the storyline. And what is so extraordinary is, when it releases, you have a wide open mind. There's a kind of openness. It's like opening the door to fresh air in your brain. The storyline is gone, and the energy is gone, and there's this moment of intense clarity. So this is it. This is why Buddha welcomes Mara as an old friend. You're my friend who's helping me. You're my friend who's helping me see the open potential of my mind that I have and that everyone else has. So a lot of the physical work of experimenting with this has come from Joko Beck. And with all of her students, she says, really, if you do it for 1 minute, if you just walk out and say, I'm going to experiment with this. This weird woman said to do this. I'm just going to try it once. You know, just 1 minute, you should go, I have just done something really wonderful. You know, I have just changed the human pattern that leads to war for 1 second. Just 1 second. And that's a huge step. Because this pattern, for lifetime after lifetime, for being after being after being, has kept us just continuously personally enslaved and globally at war. I mean, we can. I mean, it's really interesting if we just compare the pattern we were talking about in terms of the anxiety and the projecting a story, and then acting out. We can really look at our recent history of the war in Iran and Iraq, projecting something, acting it out, sending the army over there. You know, it's really what's going on with us personally. It's very connected to what's going on globally. And that's why it's really considered very courageous to practice. Because one human being at a time changes the whole planet. So, the key to doing this, the real key, I think actually we should say it's the fourth difficulty. Is being friendly to yourself. So I don't know what it is in the West. We have the highest rate of self-hatred, I think, of any culture. So developing a friendliness just towards your own human condition. Just accepting that we're a normal human being that gets annoyed, that gets jealous, that gets offended, that wants to escape. We're going to cultivate friendliness towards our own mind. If Mara knocks on the door and we're not friendly towards ourselves, you know, we don't want to see him because it's too scary. So the hardest step and the most crucial step is cultivating friendliness just towards your own mind. I'm this very fallible person. I know that this is my pattern. I know that it's not over yet. And I'm just going to be curious, and I'm just going to accept that I'm human like everyone else. That allows you then to be curious. If you can't have that first step of friendliness towards yourself, then it's really hard to be curious because you don't want to see what's there if you can't have that friendliness. But if you can say, yes, I'm imperfect, and I want to see what's going on, I'm curious, then it's okay if I only see it when I'm in the middle of anger just for a second. Oh my goodness, I'm in the middle of that pattern. Then it's not a horrible, scary thing because you're not going to castigate yourself because you don't meet your ideal. Then it's okay to say, this is my trigger. It gets me every time. So you can allow yourself to be just curious about your particular pattern. And you can say, I'm not going to climb Mount Everest today. I'm just going to see if I can identify every time it comes up today, in little ways and big ways. It's all right if I'm not Mother Teresa today. I'm just going to see if I can identify it. Then I can move to the next step. But by being friendly and self-accepting, you can allow yourself to be that curious. And what I love about the instructions that Pema gave, and she said it's only to the degree that we can be friendly towards ourselves and investigate these things, it's only to that degree we can be compassionate towards others. Because if you don't want to see something in yourself, you have to block out other people who have the same issue. So we want to be compassionate to everybody, but unless we can accept that we as a human being have that too, we're only pretending. We have an extraordinary person in our community who's done peace work all over the world. And I was with her one night when she was teaching, and she was saying that in order to go into the places that have the biggest conflicts and do peace work, she had to identify in herself as a human being that she had the capacity to kill others, to get so filled with hate that she could actually kill others, because she couldn't authentically talk to communities who had killed each other's families if she felt she was separate and apart from that capacity. And a man who was there listening, he said, "I didn't know if I could come here, but I'm a Vietnam vet, and I can see that this is a place where I can come." Because the humanity of being self-accepting made her open to hear whatever story could come out of people in those communities or in just the group of people who were there that day. So it's only to the degree that you can see other people that you can be compassionate towards other people. And what I find really interesting about this in practice is that when I drop the storyline and just feel the energy, then I can see actually how much pain I'm in when I'm in that situation. So I can accept that I might have lost my temper, and that when I lost my temper, I was in that degree of pain. And I remember I have this one friend who really gives me a really hard time, and he called me up and he gave me a really hard time just after I was going through one of these investigations, and I realized, oh my goodness, I usually get angry with him. But I'm so in touch with my own pain in this minute of how I feel, what I'm feeling when I get angry, that I can see he must be in tremendous pain. And it didn't bother me at all, because I had totally touched base with how hurt you have to be in order to be that angry towards someone else. So it really rang true with me that this curiosity and friendliness towards yourself allows you really to understand what other people are thinking and feeling. So you become more concerned that we're all in pain, as opposed to this is happening to me, you are doing this to me, etc., etc., our favorite storyline. Which gives you the impetus then to practice every time. Oh my goodness, here comes that reaction again. I'm just going to play with it today. I'm in an open state today. I'm going to drop the storyline and just see what happens when I allow that field of energy just to run its course. So I really invite you to test this out, you know, in whatever small way you'd like to. Most of the people who are practicing at Gampo Abbey were trained to do it as often as possible. And I found it's really been one of the most illuminating pieces of information. It's really simple information, but it's taught me a great deal. So interesting, because so many times we feel totally trapped. You know how often you say, well, I'm just this way? We have whole cultures who are just this way. But Irish people have Irish tempers, right? We're just this way. You know, I'm Italian, we always argue. You know, we identify ourselves with our emotions. We say, I am angry. And we can feel totally trapped to the point of being enslaved, or I'm afraid. I'm terrified. All of these things. One of the interesting things about going on retreat in India is you don't lock yourself in your room. You go in a room and you commit not to leave. But the retreat places are like way up in the mountains. There are no doctors within, you know, and especially there are no dentists. So the last time I was on retreat, I had to have a root canal. Aww. You know, so I'm sitting there in retreat thinking, oh, I must be near death. you know, you get a fever and everything else. And you know that we're so used to good medical care. You know, we're just so used to it. And to be away from it for a Western person, a dentist, can be scary. You know, and to just say, okay, I'm a human being. My body is changing. I can't do anything about this tonight. Am I going to just kill myself with fear? Or am I going to experiment with just dropping the storyline? You know, and accept that my body is changing and all of that. Same thing with, you know, you're on the phone and, oh my goodness, you have a lump. What's going on? You know, how you hold your own mind is whether you're trapped or not trapped. So it gets very interesting. What we know about new science is also very interesting. So we know if we have a pattern, what we've done in our brain is we've set up a series of connections. You have the all these little. I'm an artist, so I watch the science program since I get the visual connection. So you have all these little threads that are almost near connecting, and the chemicals jump, but you connect and you make a pattern, right? And so your brain likes functioning like a computer, going on this one pattern when you have the same triggers. Have you seen the new science shows on The Elegant Universe and things like that? There's a chemical cascade and a series of connections that have to do with a pattern of thinking. And every time you have the same reaction, you strengthen that same pattern. And when you interrupt any way the pattern, you force a new series of connections. So you're actually changing your brain when you make a new pattern. It gets really, really fascinating to see the scientific connection. So interrupting the pattern in any way, even for a minute, actually changes your whole brain. It's really quite wonderful. I've been reading the mathematician Roger Penrose, and he's talking about different kinds of outcomes. So just even imagining a particular kind of outcome changes what the outcome will be. So just sitting here visualizing ourselves changing our patterns potentially allows us to create a difference the next time the pattern arises. So what we're doing is not made up, you know, even has a connection to science. So the next step in working with these things, seeing that there's a connection in a microscopic way in your brain and globally to the way we act as a larger human community, is to say, which pattern am I going to strengthen? We have the one pattern that always leads towards acting out, eventually leads towards war. And we have a different pattern. We're not sure what the outcome of that different pattern might be, but we know that it's different. So what happens if we just resolve not to be trapped by our patterns? What if we say our job isn't at work where we're experts to be right? Our job isn't, in our whatever situation, our families to be mom and to be right all the time. Our job isn't to be right. Our job is to be open. Our job is to be free of patterns that are causing us to hurt ourselves and others. It doesn't matter what we do, just any interruption of that pattern is okay. It's a good start. It's a good beginning. Any resolve not to keep the pattern the same is actually the description that Pema uses. It's like you have a bow and arrow and a target. It's removing the target. If you're resolved not to be hooked by the pattern, then it doesn't matter that someone shoots an arrow because the target isn't there anymore. You've resolved that the pattern is the issue, and that the pattern is what you're working on. Then that allows you to be grateful to everyone because they're your pop quiz. So today, I'm just going to see if I'm going to be free from that, the worst part of the pattern. I'm going to be really curious and open to what's going on in my mind. And that means when the person who always gives me a hard time comes again to give me a hard time, they're my friend. I'm inviting them. It's like a sports, you know. I'm inviting the other team to come on the playing field. And I'm just going to see how I do in the football game today. Right? Do I get tackled or do I make the goal? I'm just going to see if I can interrupt the pattern. That's the goal. That allows us to be open tomorrow. We're opening the door. You can come in. We'll have a cup of tea and discuss what's going on.